This is AI Rob Hamilton, CEO and co-founder of AnchorWatch. Haters have been trying to cancel me for laughing at the plight of plebs. Some have even started calling me the giggler. But nothing makes me laugh harder than people trying to have AnchorWatch ads banned from Bitcoin podcasts. Ha ha ha.
Yo, this is Shinobi here to tell you that if you think you can cancel AnchorWatch, you're a certified retard.
Certified indeed. You see, AnchorWatch sets the standard when it comes to compliant, insured Bitcoin custody. We have no competitors because nobody can do what we do, which means you can't cancel us. Sorry, not sorry.
If you keep trying, AnchorWatch will start sponsoring all your favorite podcasts with ads featuring yours truly. So think before you read, unless you want to hear my voice calling you a retard 40 times per week.
AnchorWatch is the most thermodynamically sound insured custody in the game. Cry all you want, but at the end of the day,
we ain't going nowhere. We ain't going nowhere. We can't even stop now, cause it's bad boy for life. We ain't going nowhere. We ain't going nowhere. We can't even stop now, cause it's bad boy for life.
Straight from the Harlem streets.
We have a list of basically NOTS nodes that advertise on NOTS, and then the users of Comcast have data caps at their house, typically, and these are residential ASNs. They're not like the Comcast business blocks. And so, yeah, like I am like basically peering with them and asking for an IDD from a fresh node. Maybe I have like 96 of these nodes running right now because I want to get IDDs from all these clients.
Are they at least NOS nodes?
No, they're core nodes. They're actually master branch. But continuing on, essentially just like asking again and again and again, allegedly.
He is one of the most sophisticated attackers of Bitcoin.
How many of them do you think know that the max upload target comp option exists?
It's not an option if you're on Umbral or Start 9.
The apex predator of adversarial transactions.
You can't modify your comp file.
You could. I'm just saying out of the box when you click your GUI options, it's not there. But yeah, so I've succeeded the IBD from like several Comcast nodes at this point.
If you cross paths with him on chain, know you are not his peer, striking fear in Comcast node runners all over the world. His name is Portland HODL. He has agreed to sit down for an interview on the world's most thermodynamically sound Bitcoin podcast to tell his story. So sit back, relax if you can, and listen as the ghost of the Merkle tree shares his perspective with Richard Greaser and Rod Palmer on this special edition of Behind the Bitcoin Podcast.
Most people who get orange-pilled follow the same ritual. They set up a node, argue about hardware wallets on Twitter, and dedicate their lives to the cause of decentralizing and protecting Bitcoin, usually from feds. But one man took a different path. He didn't just get orange-pilled, he mainlined the entire mempool. He made adversarial transacting his MO. While the rest of us obsess over cold storage setups, he obsesses over finding cracks in the code, because nothing says love like constant psychological warfare with your favorite protocol. While we stack sats, he stacks exploits. While we argue on Twitter about whether BRC20s are spam, he's stress testing incentives until they beg for mercy. While we cosplay Cypherpunk Revolution, he's actually poking Bitcoin's weak points, not to destroy it, but to make it indestructible. He is, in a sense, the only Bitcoiner brave enough to attack Bitcoin every day, so the rest of us don't have to. Today, on Behind the Bitcoin Podcast, we go behind the game theory, behind the culture, behind the paranoia, with the NOTS dev himself, Portland HODL. Buckle up, listeners. We're talking to an adversarial peer. Welcome, Portland HODL. I have one question for you to open this. Would you call yourself a hero or a villain of Bitcoin?
I would say I'm the hero of Bitcoin that Bitcoin needs. Some people may not like it, but I think we all need Bitcoin to be stress tested. We need it to be poked. We need to find this thing, make the honey badger the strongest species on Earth that everybody can use without worry of an attacker taking advantage of this permissionless system.
So there's been a lot of confusion recently on how consensus is reached on anything pertaining to Bitcoin development. You've got people like Dennis Porter who think that Bitcoin is government and it should be more democratically decided by the users. You've got other people that see Bitcoin Core as kind of like a benevolent dictatorship. How should the community determine if we need a hero or not?
The reality is that the community shouldn't have heroes. Bitcoin is basically like a meritocracy. Don't trust and verify. And what I mean by that is, like, in Bitcoin, you need to be your own hero and you need to do your own research on absolutely everything. And that is because of the fact that every hero story also at the same time probably has a villain arc somewhere inside of it. And everybody that, like, you look up to usually ends up probably at the end of the day at some point, like, quote unquote, like, hanging themselves. Very few people in Bitcoin survive at all the levels of purity tests from every side. And we saw this with core developers recently. These people were, quote unquote, heroes of Bitcoin that we loved what they did. We were thankful for the work all the time, finding the exploits, patching them, making this thing basically bulletproof for everybody to use. And now you turn the table about a year and a half, 2 years later from the kind of start of some of this questioning on specifically X. And now they're villainized by a large portion of specifically like the Twitter audience. And what I want to point out about Twitter specifically, that is the most divisive microcosm of Bitcoin. So it is a part of Bitcoin. You have economic actors, influencers, devs, like everybody, like it is the platform to go to talk about Bitcoin. But at the end of the day, there are many other platforms, YouTube, internal chats, even at companies, all have some economic influence. But yeah, nobody in Bitcoin should have a hero. Everybody should be their own.
At the end of the day, if you think about Luke, he saved Bitcoin multiple. I was reading the other day, it's like 2013, there were 2017, Luke saved Bitcoin. And at some point, don't you earn the right to be a hero if you saved Bitcoin multiple times? Like, what's the incentive to save Bitcoin if you won't be a hero forever? If you don't get your jersey retired and hanged at the Bitcoin conference in the rafters, like, why should I want to be a hero and save Bitcoin?
It protects like your own incentives. You want the perfect money. You want number to go up very likely. And as such, saving Bitcoin, like if you actually save it like Luke did, well, you just preserved your own incentives. And like what that also leads into is I believe you can be a hero in Bitcoin, but nobody should be ever judged based on their past. At all. Like you can go like, hey, you have some merit. I believe what you've done. You've demonstrated technical capability, but an individual can turn on a dime, right? Like good actors can become bad. Bad actors can become good. The definitions of these things themselves are not actually set into stone. And as such, yeah, you need to evaluate every individual on literally a now basis. Is this guy a good actor today? An example, like has somebody been paid off by a government agency to become a Chainalysis firm? I don't necessarily know of somebody that's done that, but at the same time, that would represent maybe somebody who was good in the past who is now bad. Somebody who's bad maybe leaves and says, hey, I realized I was a shitcoiner and I came back to Bitcoin. That person can now be good. But yeah, it depends on where they are at the moment to be how somebody should look at them. They should not look at the past, really.
We talk about this a lot on the show, this issue with resting on your credentials. Being
appeal to authority, right? Isn't that like an entire type of fallacy an individual can commit?
Yeah, it's hard because. So one of my questions for you is it dangerous to refer or to suggest that Bitcoin is fallible in some way or another? Because so many people see this currency as a savior. You know what I mean? Like, we look at the world around us. It's ran by gay retards, essentially. And they're collapsing everything. Fiat money is collapsing everything. They're inflating it to infinity. Society's crumbling. People need a sense of certainty. They need a sense of hope. Bitcoin comes along, and then Portland HODL is suggesting that it's not perfect and infallible. Is that a dangerous thing to present into?
I would like to respond. I think demonstrated the opposite. And what I mean by that is, though I have attempted to poke, prod, and find weaknesses in Bitcoin, there have not been any. I have not been able to stop a block. I have not been able to break a signature. I have not been able to take funds from an individual. Like, that is the beauty of this like journey, is like every single thing I have discovered or found has been a minor inconvenience to somebody in terms of like mempool policy or your max target upload for the amount of data you can send per day, but nothing has actually broken Bitcoin. And so from a technical perspective, Bitcoin is probably one of the most infallible pieces of software we have as humanity. Released once, and it's literally just continuing to work every single day. The node Satoshi had on his laptop, I built and ran that version of Bitcoin. Today, connected it up without any code modifications, you will sync to the exact same chain tip. One release of a piece of software, and it just works. Unbelievable. I do believe Bitcoin is close to infallible as software. The social aspects of Bitcoin are a very different issue. I think people are fallible. People can use Bitcoin in insanely fallible ways. The incentives ultimately align to make bad actors go broke. And then the final component of like, what is the fallible aspect of Bitcoin? Like, where is the potential like boogeyman in the room? I would say that it's mining pools and Bitmain. Those are the only two things. I think literally the incentives also solve this problem as well. Because even if they get centralized so much and a bad thing happens, number goes down, less profitable, more companies spring in to take the, basically pick up the pieces. It all works out long term. That's my belief. And that's why I think it's okay to test and improve Bitcoin every single day. So yes, Bitcoin, I don't think anybody should say Bitcoin is dead, quote unquote. Bitcoin's not dead. I do not think Bitcoin is dying. I think Bitcoin is stronger than ever. With that said, yeah, there are like little points you could point out that aren't perfect.
I wanna push back a little bit, because you say, and nobody's questioning your technical chops or your expertise here, but even though you were not able to find a way to harm Bitcoin and to break Bitcoin, Udi and like some of the ordinal and KC ordinals were able to find it, and they were able to find a way to break Bitcoin using spam. So how do you address that if spam breaks Bitcoin?
So the argument that Bitcoin has been broken specifically by Udi because of spam, I rest on the definition of breaking Bitcoin being you are able to stop the Bitcoin network from operating, not by controlling who is buying block space or what is the contents of block space. It's if you can actually get the network to stop producing blocks or break a block to the point where it's not valid anymore. Like, you actually crash the software out. So with that said, though Udi created an environment by using spam, ordinals, and inscriptions, if you define it that way, he only created a fee market that, because Bitcoin's a free market and miners are rational, profit-seeking actors, took these quote-unquote spam transactions. The other actors on the network were not wanting to bid as much to buy that block space. So Bitcoin was 100% never broken by Udi. I think that is a completely false claim. I think it may have been used as part of like an outrage marketing campaign to probably try to get people interested in his collections of JPEGs. So no, Bitcoin, to my definition, was never broken by ordinals or inscriptions. Everything functioned perfectly. And if we could just zoom all the way out, the beautiful part, how are ordinals doing today? How are these ordinals and runes, et cetera?
Well, they're not gone. And I would say that some of these people, the loudest critics of Udi and Ordinals, would say, but I think Bitcoin is broken if it is gay. And if these fee markets for Ordinals make Bitcoin gay, then it is, it might as well be broken because I don't want to use gay money.
Yeah. I, as a developer, have a tough time determining like how to define what kind of spam makes Bitcoin. Like, how did the spam make Bitcoin
is,
gay?
I don't have a technical definition for you. I would just go off of what the Supreme Court has said in the past. I know it when I see it.
Yeah, okay,
I can't describe
it
to you, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah, so, but if, like, all of a sudden your view of Bitcoin is changing into, like, a more gay view, and that's up to you whether or not you like it, but it seems like it's, like, more of a negative thing that's become gay because of these spam transactions. The fact is, though, it kind of, the actual effect of it is mitigated by the fact the attacker, or quote-unquote the person making these things, runs out of money, and that's what's happening right now. These spam transactions, they're still there, yes, because people are putting this content on chain. But with that said, you can easily outbid it today. So if you want to transfer a transaction, you can do 0.5 sats per VBite below any previous possible threshold before July. No, you could never do a fee this low until this year on Bitcoin. So with that said, if you want it to be a little less gay, as you say, you got to pay up. You got to pay for that block space and turn it around. But that's the thing of Bitcoin. It's permissionless. You can make Bitcoin what you want Bitcoin to be.
Put your money up. Put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, put your money where your mouth is. Yeah.
And bid up those blocks. Richard, did you have a question?
I wanted to let you go on this train of thought because I've got a segue to a different topic.
So it's, but what about the fact that this spam, it builds up and it makes it harder for people in the global south to run, to be a node runner? I mean, think about when I was 13 years old, I got Napster. I waited 4 days to download The Middle by Jimmy Eat World, on a 28K Earthlink connection. TikTok Zoomers, broccoli haircut kids, like, they don't have the patience to wait a week to download a node if they need to be sovereign and have permissionless access, you know, censorship resistant money, all this. They don't have time to wait a couple days to download a node. How do we solve that if these spammers are filling it with a gay history? They don't want to download a gay history on the blockchain.
Whew, first of all, let's address two things here. First of all, the type of content on the blockchain. So that you cannot control. It's a permissionless system. If you absolutely cannot have that specific type of content, you can do one thing, basically. You can run a pruned Bitcoin node, aka you download the blocks and even whatever content they have in them, you'll throw away after you're done. So you can put this on your system for a little bit. It's in RAM, but it goes away. The second thing is, like, okay, let's talk about the reality. Has spam actually, like, made node running worse? The answer is, to a slight degree, yes. Because of the fact that the average block size, the amount of data being added each time a new block is mined, did increase for a period of about, like, a year and a half. Thanks to the bounds of Bitcoin, which is 4 megabytes per block, you can't go past that. Like, that's the hard limit. Bitcoin, if you are running a Bitcoin node, you have to think adversarially. You need to run a node expecting the worst case scenario. Somebody could do 4 megabyte, 4 megabyte, 4 megabyte, 4 megabyte. But overall, the actual time chain itself is growing at a rate which is barely noticeable compared to barely noticeably different compared to the past. That's my statement on that. It's like, there's nobody has provably shown that the spam has made Bitcoin node runners any worse off materially. So that's what I'd say.
So, to clarify, thinking adversarially when you're running a node, is that just for a economic node, or is that for a virtuous voting node too, or is it all nodes?
Okay, so an economic node is a virtuous voting node. There's no difference. Like, economic influence is one of the pillars of, like, influence in Bitcoin, where you have quote-unquote voting rights if you could think about it in any concept. And yeah, at the end of the day, you need to think adversarially when you have any amount of money invested in running a Bitcoin node, or if you could potentially have any expenses related to running a Bitcoin node. Example, AWS, right? Like if you have a monthly bill, you should have some like investment into making sure this thing doesn't like uncap loss you to the end of time. Also, like if you're storing your money in a hardware wallet, you want to make sure your node is absolutely at the correct chain tip. As such, think adversarially. How could somebody distribute a bad binary? Why not just build it from source? Is your copy of Umbral like legit? Like just very basic checks can prevent a lot of pain and hardship, and it becomes much more important, like not just node running, but wallets specifically. Like anybody out there, like just always, if you're using a software wallet, do not trust that wallet on a desktop computer. Always look at the outputs on your hardware wallet to make sure the addresses are correct. But in terms of the Bitcoin node, like how do you have, you mentioned the term like voting and virtues. Bitcoin nodes in of themselves have no influence, no voting rights per se. Running a node does not give you the right to vote for anything. The reason why is, let me take the scenario of I run an AWS account and I have a lot of capital. Let's say like $10,000. I could spool up probably 2,000-3,000 Bitcoin nodes and put them on the network. Let's say we have 20,000 nodes. Does that give me roughly 1/6 of the voting rights on the Bitcoin network? Do I suddenly just get each my node raises its little node hand and goes, I like this software, OpsCTV? No, that's absolutely not the case. Bitcoin is rough consensus. As such, your node, quote unquote, its ability to have influence on the network depends on the scaling factor of your economic influence or hash rate. What I mean by that, you can either one, mine with that Bitcoin node with your hash rate, and then you get to influence the contents of what is being written to the Bitcoin time chain. That is amazing. That's where a lot of the policy disagreements actually come from, is the fact these miners have so much influence relative to the just kind of relay nodes on the network in terms of what gets put in blocks. And that's purely because mining nodes are the only ones that can put anything into blocks, right? And then the other way is economic force. Okay, my example on this one is, let's say I, Portland HODL, run a hamburger shop in El Salvador. Okay? And so this hamburger shop takes Bitcoin and Lightning payments, and I am really opposed to OpsCTV. This is a pretty brutal example, but I'm going to use it anyways. And I go on Twitter, I say, hey, my hamburger shop, we don't like OpsCTV. We want our money to stay the same. It's got to be really, really solid, and we don't trust the proposal after reviewing it. Okay, so great. Everybody's going to go, that's a nothing burger. I don't care that much. It may get a few like retweets, etc. But what happens when an economic node that controls billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin wants to make a decision? A BlackRock, or for example, a Coinbase, and they say, we support CTV. Then a lot of people get involved because of the fact that their money is tied up with these institutions. In the case of, for example, BlackRock, IBIT, it literally says in the prospectus of their ETF, in the event of a fork in Bitcoin, we select the version of Bitcoin to be the holdings of the actual fund itself, and we will liquidate the other side of the fork. That node runner right there has tons of influence to decide a complete liquidation event of hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin, as well as like the direction of the next fork, because everybody's got their value locked in this thing. So that's kind of my point. It's like just running a node or spooling up a bunch of nodes for the sake of having nodes does not do anything other than make the Bitcoin time chain more available.
Yeah, I do think though that it is also fundamentally, it depends on like what you're talking about is like the actual incentives, how they play out on chain. But there is a little bit of a second layer, the cultural second layer. You can't have, you know, Matthew Corrado recommends Start9, for example. So a lot of the knots, nodes runners have been buying. So if you pay $900 for a Start9 node server, that is an economic decision, not as a political decision. So there, you have to take that into account. Like Start9 is selling so many nodes. There is, it does tell you something about the seriousness of the, you know, these Knots people to make this decision.
Yeah. And to that, I would say that like running a node is amazing. And you're also creating like economic influence for Start9. And Start9 has some use their influence. For example, they have created now like a Knots download and even publicly like stated on their Twitter, like, hey, we kind of like are into this now. And we're kind of like really saying like, hey, you have this option, really pushing it. With that said, though, like think about it. Like you buy this $900 node from Start9. Okay. Your Bitcoin journey has begun. Okay, let's get you started. We're going to do a lightning we're going to run some lightning channels, some L&D, etc. Cool.
Let's think and store a lot of spam. Let's put it that way. You can send a lot of spam.
$900
we can handle it.
But yeah, you're not going to have a problem. Like if you get a Start9, I don't think you're going to have a problem downloading the time chain, as long as it's not the Raspberry Pi variant. But regardless, okay, you get this node, and Bitcoin is like getting serious. Like it's soft fork time. What influence do you have as that node runner? Like what can you do? Like that you're pinned up against the wall. These devs have told you you're going to drink CTV whether or not you like it. What can you do with your $900 node?
Well, first of all, you can handle IBD downloads, so you're a little bit more fortified. But You can refuse to filter their spam or to relay their spam, their transactions. So yep. they can't go through you. That's it. That's the only thing.
Yeah. Well, there's the ultimate option as a node runner. You can say that, hey, I don't want to accept the block that you've produced as the miner. The miner pushes down your node's throat, the CTV block. I'm using CTV as an example because most people know what it is, hopefully. But like, your node, you can say, hey, I'm done. No more. And you can say, I don't want this block. The problem then becomes your node is stalled out. It's not taking any more blocks because you're refusing to build on top of the chain tip. You have no economic influence. You can't cry to anybody saying like, hey, I forked off the network because I didn't want this block in there. Like that's why economic influence matters. Because if somebody forks Coinbase off, right? Like let's say Coinbase forks off because they invalidate. That situation becomes much different because now people have tons of value locked up in this exchange that their chain tip isn't moving forward anymore. Miners probably have some investment in this. And so this interaction is what really is the meat and potatoes. But buying a $900 Start9 is an amazing educational tool. And I'm saying this for any node specifically. You can learn how to be a Bitcoiner, and a node is the first touch point and one of the very few touch points you can have to actually like feel Bitcoin. Right? Like you're doing something with this invisible money. And that's really good. That's actually like, if you look at my history as Portland Audl, I got started with run a node. Like literally I was, hey, run a node. I'd help people with Bitcoin tech support was my first spaces. I ran every week on Monday, Bitcoin tech support, and I'd help people with their nodes. And so with that though, I also had like my initial fallacy was I literally said the quote, one node, one vote. That was in one of my first Twitter spaces because I didn't understand it's your influence on the Bitcoin network through economics or whatever. You got to be doing something with it.
I think that I don't think that there's anything wrong with saying one node, one vote, because if running a node just gives you a vote, that ultimately doesn't matter. Like your vote doesn't matter. Voting doesn't matter. It's about how much money you control. So yeah, one node is one vote, but one vote doesn't equal, one vote in terms of influence on the actual network. It's really
like the scale of that vote per se. Yeah, I guess you could say, yeah, you're voting with your node, but like the amount of vote you get is very different.
You're voting with your node, but most people that have power are voting with their wallet. And if your wallet doesn't control UTXOs, well, nobody cares what your opinion
is. That's a little bit tricky as well, though, because what value... Okay, let's talk economic influence, like how running a node affects somebody, even with a ton of Bitcoin here. I'm going to give the example. You are Satoshi, okay? And you run an economic node, a Start9 you got, and you connect Sparrow over Tor, and you're still remaining... You're completely a non. Okay. Again, Bitcoin is changing. The fork is happening. What can you do? What influence do you have right now? Like with your node, what's the only thing you can do?
I think one of the primary things you can do is you can tweet about that you have a node, that you're a node runner, and it gives you a sense of credibility when you're arguing with people on the internet.
Well, technically, yeah, I guess you could do that, but it's not going to have a whole lot of influence per se. The most you could say is like, hey, I'm going to dump these coins and I will create a negative market event. And then if you guys don't go with it, and even then, like your node can get forked off the network and you wouldn't be able to dump your coins because you forked. You'd still have to follow the fork to dump your coins unless you dump
right.
it pre. Yeah, sorry, I'm done.
Yeah. You're right. So my point is not so much that if you control all the Bitcoin, like you control the network. However, if Michael Saylor, what the fork that Michael Saylor chooses, should it come down to something like this?
It will.
But Michael Saylor doesn't run a node, so he doesn't even have to have a node to vote.
No,
he's proxying the Coinbase.
He's gonna rely on Coinbase or the federal government will be like, hey, Michael, we have a start nine for you, and that will be Michael's node. He'll have his start nine, and he'll just kind of probably trust and don't verify on that one. And he's going to follow whatever orders he's told, because any individual in Bitcoin, like working for Mara, which is a publicly traded company, you should always assume that those Bitcoin are captured. At a moment's notice, if the government says you're giving us the keys, they will comply.
But there is a value to running a node, even if it's not so powerful in the democracy, on-chain
yes,
democracy.
Absolutely.
But what about the problems of just, you know, I'm running a node to send a political message, and I got my Umbral, and I do my Knots node, and then, you know, maybe I don't use it for a couple of years. But then this comes to a point where I do need to use it. And because I need to use my node, I need to transact on-chain sovereignly. It's probably a bad, you know, climate outside of my subnet in my house here. It's probably, there's probably reasons that I'm doing this out of the blue. But I haven't used it for years. I don't, how do I know I'm not just being surrounded by Fed nodes who are going to, you know, screw me over when I try to use this for the first time?
So, from the actual software that Bitcoin is, you do validate the rules that your node has installed in Bitcoin Core or Knots on your start nine. So you can guarantee that even if the nodes are these Fed nodes, have surrounded your node, all your peers are just Feds, you know you're at least getting a source of truth on that node. The other note as well is that you can use the whole thing becomes at that point like a privacy thing. So I guess I'll elaborate a little bit further, censorship potentially as well. So maybe the Fed nodes could be running like a blocks only or a malicious node set, so your transaction doesn't get broadcast. Then you can mail it to somebody, use mempool.space, broadcast your transaction, because you don't actually need to use your node to send transactions. You only need to get your node to the chain tip to spend your UTXO in that case. You just need to be able to sync the IBD. Your peers, if they're malicious Fed nodes, could maybe, well, I guess let's make the joke here. They could ask for a bunch of IBDs and run your Comcast bill up. So that could be a problem. But I would just suggest maybe like you could call up Comcast, or maybe you'll just take the warning with Stride. You'll just be like, hey, my bad, 1 month. I just got to get this transaction out. I'm going to be downloading with my start nine here. And then the other thing is like ultimately privacy. So like, okay, you're surrounded by Fed nodes. Your IP is already completely doxxed. Like they already know who you are. They're listening to you for a reason. Like you're done. You need to use Tor at that point. You need to use real manly privacy tools, like actual like mountain man. Go get your Tor connection set up. I think Start 9 actually uses Tor by default and bypass these ClearNet privacy like basically issues that are created because your IP address is associated with your ISP, can be associated with your name as well. So.
Yeah.
It would suck though. Like, oh, go ahead.
Well, I still want to segue into a different topic, but if you want to continue on this one, feel free to.
No, go feel free to segue.
I'm solid on this one. Yeah. Just basically use privacy if you're surrounded by Fed nodes. Go just set up a Tor connection or an I2P, and then you can bypass most of that. Like, just don't use the default, hey, I'm going to use my Comcast connection to go out.
So what we've really been learning from a lot of the arguing on online recently is that this is not much of a technical discussion or argument. It's a very social-based argument and discussion. There seems to be a growing rift between the podcasters and the developers. Podcasters, developers, miners, they oftentimes clash with each other for a variety of reasons, but they're all part of the Bitcoin security model. They all secure the network in various ways. The podcasters bring users and market demand to Bitcoin so that the miners can mine profitably, so the developers can receive funding. There's justification for it. They're all important. Do you see...
I actually see the replacement of developers with podcasters long term. I think that the problem with developers, even like our podcast today, they're hard to communicate with. Like you have like this different species right now, like on stage, and the podcasters can communicate very clearly, like excellent audio quality. They know how to handle PR with individuals. They know how to relate. The issue with devs, as we've seen with specifically like Bitcoin Core, they didn't relate to the people. They didn't have a podcaster out there to represent Bitcoin Core. And look at what happened. They got absolutely crushed. So, well, now, and their credibility is trashed. It's gone.
They do have podcasters kind of springing up to represent Core now. So you've got Stefan Levera, you got Shinobi. Did you see that podcast that Shinobi did with Gloria?
No, I did not. I've been pretty lax on my 40 hours a week. I apologize.
It was pretty good. They did it at the MIT Bitcoin Expo, and it was the first time that I learned that Gloria didn't have a beard, and so that was a pretty shocking moment for me. Like that, I feel like that was a pretty important piece of information to know. I think a lot of podcast listeners would benefit from knowing that Gloria doesn't have a beard.
No, Gloria does not have a beard, as the Twitter profile would suggest. I don't know why that specific photo was chosen. So, but here we are.
I mean, I can understand why. Like, I think it's hard being a woman in a lot of circumstances in Bitcoin. And I mean, you see this, you know, historically, like people like J.K. Rowling, they use pen names in order to not deal with the scrutiny or the stigma around like women authors. And I feel like it's a similar thing with submitting code. People put into question, they're like, you're a woman, you're young and you're hot. Why are you in this position? Do you deserve to be in this position? Whereas like a man, like the beard in a lot of ways acts as kind of like that pen name of bringing legitimacy to her code, because the problem is a lot of people don't take the time to or aren't capable of reading and critically analyzing her contributions. So I think the beard is very useful, but at the same time, you know, I think people would also benefit from knowing that she's hot.
But Knots runners can't code. They can't read code, so they can't read the code or see her history, her GitHub history, and respect her experience and skill. But the beard lets them know, like, oh, okay, I should list. This is an account with authority.
Yeah, they can't read the code, but they can read her LinkedIn profile.
Well, they also use the same code that's written by Gloria in Bitcoin Knots, because they take Bitcoin Core and they apply patches to it to make it Knots. It's literally Bitcoin Core at the core with a fun new GUI to use with more sliders and more selectors.
Yeah. Well, I think that, so kind of go back to the original question I was asking. So you were talking about how the podcasters are going to become developers. I think what has become super clear is the importance of public relations in general.
And yes, absolutely. And what I mean by podcasters are going to replace developers, I'm being facetious here to a degree because it's a fun podcast to be on here. But at the end of the day, look at the contributions Mechanic has created to society's perception of Bitcoin and node running in general.
without any technical background on that, right? So like in like Mechanic doesn't contribute code. He doesn't put in the work to make Bitcoin secure or make that machine tick. But he also has the authority to tell people exactly how everything should work. And so he's conjuring into reality his own version of Bitcoin. So with that said, like podcasters, I think, will become sort of like wizards of Bitcoin, where they get so much influence through their ability to communicate that they will conjure the version of Bitcoin that they see best fit. And the people that right. want or that listen to these podcasts will then become the apparatus or the instruments of execution to help achieve the basically make that a reality for these podcasters. So the podcasters are going to become the devs, and then the devs are just going to become the labor, basically. That's kind of my thought yes, on how podcasting interfaces with Bitcoin is that the actual pillars of security of Bitcoin, where you are like the influence of Bitcoin, you have like the devs, the miners, and the economic actors. That's actually going to just become miners, economic actors, and podcasters. And the
and
we're seeing like the effect of podcasting and like Bitcoin has become now like the term suit coiner is very thrown around so loosely in Bitcoin communities. The podcasters are the interface between the capital that NGU enjoyers so much want and covet, right? They want that NGU. Like, I'm okay with losing a little bit of cypherpunk for that. The podcasters will be that interface going forward, and the devs will execute the podcasters' requests, all leading to that NGU, the incentives of Bitcoin, and that's it. So podcasters are the devs.
I agree, and I don't think there's anything facetious about that observation, because I read a good tweet where somebody, and a lot of everybody agreed with it, so it must be true, that the most popular programming language in 10 years will be the English language because of AI. It won't be C++. It won't be Rust. It won't be Python. So, and you said it yourself, the devs don't know how to communicate. The podcasters are the ones who articulate the vision, using the English language for the most part, on podcasts. And so naturally the apex articulate English speakers will be the ones who, control Bitcoin, and our vision, the 40 hours per week vision, wherever that is, will take over. It won't be Rust Bitcoin. It'll be podcast Bitcoin. It's going
to
be a slow,
painful journey for a lot of devs that have to get canceled along the way, but it's happening right now. There's nothing, like, we are seeing this and witnessing it in real time.
It's not learn to code.
Until the culture comes back, podcasters are your devs.
It's not learn to code. It's learn to podcast.
Learn to English. Just interface with the AI. Just that's all you got to do. Like, podcasters with AI, like, you kind of brought in a new dimension to this with artificial intelligence. At some point, the podcasters may not even need devs to execute their visions any longer. They will just go to ChatGPT and ask, I would like a more restrictive policy in my node. I would like to block a specific node. My Comcast users have been affected. I need to protect them. And the AI will write this node software to do everything the podcaster wishes. The podcasters are the summoners of Bitcoin.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we're leading the way on this trend. We may have been the first Bitcoin podcasters to have our own Bitcoin correct. Implementation with Bugle Core.
And then, so real quick, can you go over, like, I haven't ran the Bugle Core software. What did you guys do differently than Bitcoin Core, and why did you guys decide to fork? Like, I as a dev, I've always wondered, like, what was it that made you, diverge?
We were the first Bitcoin implementation to merge Peter Todd's pull request, the OpReturn pull request. We did it because we were tired of waiting. We wanted less restrictive relay policy because we are journalists. We support free speech, and we felt it was important. Based. Yeah.
So I got to throw it out there, though. I was the first one to remove OpReturn limits from the Bitcoin Core implementation at Marathon for Slipstream. So
Well, we were the first podcasters to do
it. You're the first podcaster. We were the first podcasters.
We were the first open source. You did it like for a commercial. You're right.
First open source implementation fulfilling Satoshi's true vision versus this closed source empire-like corporation.
One question is, you know, people are upset about the potential of having a big Comcast bill. But can you talk about, and we kind of alluded to this, you know, if you're going to run a node, if you're going to be on the network, if you want to make this impact, whatever impact you're trying to have, know that there are vulnerabilities, risk, that there's things you have to think about other than spam. Because everybody, the Knots people, they have spam derangement syndrome is what I've been calling it. But there's other threats out there that they might not be thinking about. It's what kind of mindset mentality do you need to have to go into being a node runner? It's not just, you know, a LARP. It's a serious thing.
So in terms of just being a Bitcoin node runner, like pretty much you should just, I don't think the average user needs to worry as much about specific elements because of the fact that like a lot of the devs have done the lifting of poking it before them to make sure that these things don't negatively impact them. Like they can't have specific like transactions happen that make their node not work or a specific block request, etc. And so, yeah, as a node runner, the most important thing is like focus on your privacy and just in general, just use your node, keep up to date, like watch this thing and interface with it. That's the most important thing. But as somebody who wants to actually like improve and make nodes better, you gotta actually look at code. You actually gotta review. You got to push Bitcoin to its limits. And that's what I do. That's like my whole philosophy is that I want to find the points where Bitcoin can be improved for global adoption of Bitcoin as money for miners, node runners, and just it's going to work without question. And by doing that, like I've come up with some pretty interesting like little vectors that are problematic for Bitcoin. An example would be on my Twitter. I have the Poison Blocks, the Mempool Anarchist Cookbook. That is actually like a really bad Bitcoin transaction that can happen right now that we need to patch out. The poking and like I didn't actually attack any Comcast nodes, but I brought it up in discussion. That was a pain point. People realized like, oh wow, like nobody had really thought about this. But you need to think like your adversary, and Bitcoin is permissionless. Anybody can use it. So if you are on one of these limited connections, okay, can the software itself determine ahead of time? And that's like something people are now thinking about. Can we create a version of Bitcoin that will automatically determine if you have data caps or not so that it'll automatically limit that upload? But if you're running a node, you do need to understand like, hey, the Bitcoin time chain is huge. You're downloading stuff for sometimes days at a time. And if you have a limited Comcast connection that has 1.2 terabytes a month before you get your warning, you will blow through 800 gigabytes of that or 2/3 with one piece of software. So that as a node runner, you need to think about like your own individual circumstances, but the majority of these things are handled. I have just went out onto the fringes and found something that a select few nodes may be impacted by.
Yeah, I think there's the, you know, mind your own business. I think that there's a lot of node runners who, for the majority of them, should just mind their own node. Just mind your own node and stop worrying so much about these theoretical potential future threats to Bitcoin. Just mind your own node and you go from there.
Which, yeah, that's basically the way nodes work, like in general. There's, of course, fringes. And because Bitcoin is so marginal, and what I mean by that is like it is relatively stable. Bitcoin is the same rough thing it was 15 years ago. Any little deviation from that can create a new cycle. Somebody literally just finds some specific like Comcast thing for a user that shouldn't, I'm a nobody on Twitter, that shouldn't have blown up because nobody should have cared. If I didn't say anything, nobody would notice because nothing even happened. But like, yeah, that's the ultimate point is that very small things devs say can have huge influence because of the fact everybody is seeking with a $2 trillion asset, the latest thing that's happened on something that's 15 years old. So for example, as well, you've recently had a kind of stir up in Bitcoin Core literally calling one side, one group, calling for a credibility crisis, corrupt core, etc., for changing the value of op return that gets relayed on the network per Bitcoin Core version 30, not even removing the option. But regardless, like, the statements made have been like, hey, this is going to break Bitcoin, etc. That is completely false. Like, it's on the margin, a nothing burger that gets blown out of proportion because it's the topic of the day. It's the only interesting thing that I believe anybody could find. And you can see that how volatile this is during these specific events by how distracted individuals get with, like, bigger fish. And what I mean by that is, like, okay, X thing happens, blows out of proportion on Twitter, and then somebody else does something even remotely slightly bigger that is still, to me, pretty uninteresting, and that becomes the new topic because of the fact that the attention has shifted. It's moved on. It was nothing burger in the first place. It was just a point. It was a wedge. It's something you can put in, something you can discuss. It's engagement. And on every side of all of this, I'm just going to say, there's money being made. If you run a pool, you can make money by running a loose mempool policy. We've seen literally miners increase their profitability by accepting more transactions through these non-standard, like, non-gossip channels. Okay, well, what about the other side? If you run a tight mempool policy, go say that you're saving Bitcoin through relay policy. Like, you're going to get more members. It's like everybody, the podcasters are the ultimate winners. They get content all the time. So, like, the only people that I would say are true, like, in the middle, like, not getting a ton is those that aren't learning and just sitting through these kind of discussions without using their life's time. Like, you should be learning about that. You should be critically thinking.
Right.
But everybody had an incentive to make this drama happen. Every single side did.
My final point on this topic is that, you know, we learned this in spaces earlier today. Some shitcoiner came in and was telling us all these threats to Bitcoin. It's like, I've heard them all years ago. This is always, if you want to scream at the top of your lungs for everybody to hear that you found a new, you know, vulnerability or a new thing that breaks Bitcoin or a new threat to Bitcoin, I'm not listening to you unless you listen to 40 hours per week. Unless you listen to 40 hours per week, I know, like, if you haven't, go listen, and it's probably been addressed already. This is probably known. Just calm down. And if you're not listening to Bitcoin podcasts, it's just like, I don't have time to listen to all the threats that you found on Twitter that are a threat to Bitcoin. It's just listen. Go listen to podcast.
What is the meme? I found Bitcoin and I'm here to fix it. Like, that is a very common thing. It's just the new perspective. You finally looked at the elephant from the lens you have, and you've decided, I can fix the rest of the pieces I don't understand. Like, that is so incredibly common in Bitcoin.
Absolutely. Well, on topic of using Bitcoin as money, that's an even controversial statement in and of itself, but we're big believers in that here at the Bugle. One thing that we do before, or at the end of every show, is we go through our Fountain Booze. So we're big, big supporters of the value for value economy. I think who's the biggest winner of the drama? It's PodConf. The Podcast Conference Industrial Complex is the winner. One of the ways to disintermediate PodConf is the value for value ecosystem.
100%. It is. When they try to distract you with the latest thing, the current thing, sometimes you have to go. Because when you have to go subterranean, you have to go to the value for value, the intellectual Silk Road, Noster, group chats, retreat from the timeline. It's they're jamming you. It's a psychological warfare. But the signal is real on the Fountain Boost timeline.
Absolutely. So for our last episode, I don't think you had an opportunity to listen to it because you've been, you're a busy guy. You're busy arguing. You're busy coding. The last episode we did was with my good friend, Open Mike. He runs a company called Toonster, which is a streaming platform for musicians to be able to earn Bitcoin. So one of the problems with... there's a lot of problems that musicians are facing as far as being able to earn income. When you're adding a live stream to all your live events and you have the potential to earn hundreds or thousands of dollars from people watching it around the world, it really is a value add for Bitcoin. I think it's a value add for the musician. I think it's a really cool project that I'm a big fan of. Have you heard of Toonster?
I have not heard of Toonster.
Are you a musician, or you like music?
I do love music, but with that said, it's classical music. So typically my music flavor is going to YouTube and finding some longer stretch and then just programming while I listen to that.
I'm a big classical music fan as well. Who are some of your favorites?
I like Bach particularly.
Okay. Yeah, I've been... I'm looking at my playlist. My classical playlist. Been listening to a lot of Tchaikovsky. What do you like about Bach?
Specifically, I just feel like in general, just it is easy to listen to and it's not super slow. And in like, I don't know. I just like the style. That's all I can say on that. I'm not an aficionado. I typically just put on the playlists and I've noticed that those are the most common ones that I will end up bookmarking.
Very cool. But yeah, that's kind of a summary of the conversation that we had a couple weeks now. But yeah, first boost of the show, Shadrack, our good friend, very cool guy. 323 sats, says woo, !! × 4 LFG, # 40 HPW. Well, thank you, Shadrack.
The next one is, it's from Rev Hoddle up there in Michigan on the homestead. He boosted 1,121 sats. He said, I look forward to Toonster TRL, which was my idea for bringing like Carson Daly TRL to Toonster and having a top 10 countdown. But we can all send in our groupie videos from the local Bitcoin meetups instead of Times Square. Any of those local Bitcoiners out there can come hang with me at the South Bend, Indiana Bitcoin Meetup the first Thursday every month at Lang Lab, 6:30 p.m. Learn something, earn something, share something, buy something, build relationships and resilience with local Bitcoiners who cast our vote for the best music in all of Bitcoin culture while we're at it. So thank you, Rev Hoddle. Rev Hoddle is, he uses the boost section to comment and always to have us read an ad for his local Bitcoin meetup there in South Bend, Indiana.
I've never been to South Bend. I like Indiana a lot. I've never been to South Bend, but I just like Notre Dame quite a bit. I think they're a bunch of arrogant assholes. They always start, like, we're getting into the football season. Sports ball season is starting, folks, and Notre Dame probably has a much higher ranking than they deserve. Again, as always. It's what happens when you're the premier Catholic sports ball team. And like, there's over like a billion Catholics. Like it's a rigged system where they always rank Notre Dame way higher to get the Catholics to watch sports ball. You gotta sell the advertisements to advertisers for sure. But it's cool that, How does Bitcoin fix Notre Dame getting unfair coverage on ESPN?
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that.
No.
Portland, are you a sports ball fan? You like sports?
No, I absolutely not. I don't even like ESPN, Notre Dame. Like, I know ESPN is sports ball channel and Notre Dame soccer team. I have no clue on any of this.
So Notre Dame, like their big thing is football.
Ah, football is soccer globally, kind of correct? No, I'm just kidding. No, I have no clue on that. I apologize.
So you never were much of a sports ball person growing up. Like, did you...
Never. Ever.
Did you... What did you do growing up?
Oh, what I did growing up? I did a lot of motocross as like a kid, right? And I was always into specifically Legos and like electronic gizmos. But in my fifth grade year, that's when all that changed. I forget which age that correlates to. but I built my first computer from scratch that year. And then I was like, then I became like, okay, let's keep building and like overclocking. And like, that's all I did was just like modify computers and write code and just have fun, you know? And that became my passion. Like from there on out, I never had time or cared about sports specifically because I just don't understand it. Like, I don't want to take the time to understand the rules. I don't understand the emotions people feel. Like, people get very riled up about these people throwing a ball around. And I just never have been able to recapture that level of an endorphin rush from a guy running across a white line or something like that. Yeah, I built computers growing up. That's what I did.
I wonder if that plays into the conflict that you're having with the podcasters right now. Baba 10,000 Sats says, from an old fat musician songwriter, you want a crowd feeds off a crowd. It's called excitement. First off, Noster will most likely never be mainstream. It's too privacy oriented. Therefore, when an artist stays niche, they should expect a niche crowd. The music business has always been about business. Sadly, it should be treated as such, which most artists are not business oriented. They need help. You don't become the Rolling Stones on your own. Fee for free is a great idea for music, but change is mostly a decade plus at best. Most of the folks on Fee for free music won't last a D case only for monetary purposes. But again, until Noster becomes simple and mainstream, they will never find a crowd. If they are good, they need TikTok, Insta, and YouTube to get popular enough to go out and tour. It's a numbers game. Sorry, not sorry.
Always the optimist. Baba, he's great. But Baba is an artist. Baba is a songwriter. Baba was a musician. And he is, you know, I tried to say some of those things a little bit softer. But Baba, we'll put it to you exactly how he sees it.
I think he made a lot of really good points with it. You know, it's like a lot of musicians are not good business people. They need Jews behind the scene. This is why the Jews control the music industry. It's not some elaborate conspiracy. It's just that Jews tend to be good at business. It's the same thing. Devs oftentimes aren't the best communicators, so they need podcasters. It's a thing. Well, thank you for the boost, Baba. Really appreciate it. Yeah, I don't know if Noster's going to become mainstream. I like what's happening on Noster, though. I'm enjoying it. But I guess we're kind of a niche podcast. You have to listen to 40 hours per week to actually understand what the hell we're talking about, which is kind of a big ask for normal people that prefer to watch sports ball instead.
Right. Avi Burra. 10,000 sats. Thank you, Avi. Open mic is the face of the value for value revolution. That's right. The Toonster is, and there's not much else out there, and it's, they're building something cool.
I think to change the world, sometimes you just have to be a crazy person, you know, and do things not just because you get, everybody else sees it. Like a lot of times you have the vision for something and you just go with it and the market follows eventually. But so a lot of times it doesn't, but it takes crazy people to do things like that. Maybe Mike's crazy. I don't know. He seems pretty rational to me. I like him a lot. Well, do you know Avi Portland? You ever
interact? No, I don't. I've never interacted.
He's a great guy. He's got the biggest like Noster oriented podcast, the Pleb Chain Radio. Very active.
I actually should listen to that. That seems really cool.
Are you ever active on Noster?
Noster, not so much, as I have quite a few gripes with the UI UX, and specifically, I do have an account. I did the first grinding of an NPub, and what that means is like my NPub is actually in pub 7777777 and then a bunch of digits because I use my computer to try random private keys until I got that vanity URL. But in terms of my experience with Noster, specifically using Amethyst on Android as my client and Snort.social and this was probably about a year ago. Overall, just like lots of issues loading content, things crashing, and I feel that the discussion is a little bit narrow in scope for compared to like what I like to see. I like to see a lot of Bitcoin content from Bitcoin developers in addition to a lot of general developer content as well. So I can kind of like combine these ideas of like, hey, like this programming language has now implemented X feature. Can I use this to build on Bitcoin? I'm always looking to make those kind of links. I just don't see enough of that on Nostr with a bad UI, UX. I understand its potential. I just am not, it's not where I want to be at the moment. So
what year did you get into Bitcoin roughly?
What do you mean by get into? Cause there's like a couple touch points, like actually understand it or like first touched sat.
I guess first touch it.
First touch it was 2010.
Okay. So very early on. And then like, when did you get really interested in
actually like convicted? 2018. Like I, before I had done like lots of Bitcoin mining. And so from GPUs to ASICs and then every, like I sold all the time. And from there, like 2013 was the first big one, liquidated the whole stack. Price went down massively. I think like $200, $160. I literally said it was a scam. I was very young. I didn't understand what Bitcoin is for. I didn't even understand the power of what Bitcoin is. I literally thought it was a get rich quick scheme. Okay. Exit Bitcoin. Don't even touch it. Don't even think about it for years. 2016 rolls around. I'm working at Intel. People are talking about Bitcoin. Hey, do you want to go in on some miners with one of my coworker? We buy miners, we mine Bitcoin, we sell the miners when we're done. And then, sold, I did liquidate all at that point again. And then the final, like after this, I never liquidated Bitcoin again. And that was in 2018. I did a lot of Linux contribution, Linux kernel contributions in 2017. And I started like actually looking at the Bitcoin code. And then, yeah, it became like, holy, this is actually really excellent software. Like, this is going to work. This isn't going to break. Like, I tried figuring out ways to break it, and it doesn't break. So at that point, I was like, okay, Bitcoin has never done me wrong. I love Bitcoin. It's really cool. I know how to mine with it. And then I just started doing acquisition of Bitcoin personally, like stacking my sats. I haven't mined since, though, that 2017.
So you just need, like, technically, like, another 7 years of Nostr development to be interested in it for the UX to improve.
Or I would literally have to go through and actually do the proof of work, review the Nostr code and go like, hey, this is the okay. Philosophically though, the incentives are very different. Like Bitcoin to me, like, oh, this is going to get me in so much hot water. Bitcoin fundamentally solves a problem with humanity. And that problem is that nation states can't stop touching the money printer. The temptation to put your hand in the cookie jar and grab unlimited cookies is always throughout history been a problem. Every nation has experienced inflation. Satoshi created the cure to inflation. That seems to me like a bet I want to take to fix humanity and a movement like I really want to be a part of. Like that is the fundamental to humans to fix. Like the amount of suffering inflation causes is absolutely insane. And Satoshi just comes out with a fixed cap supply for an asset that permissionlessly can be moved between person A to person B. That is like, that's why I like Bitcoin. Nostr is a different proposition where it benefits me and it's kind of like censorship-free communication. But I don't think I've grasped like why it's the movement that fundamentally changes humanity. I think Bitcoin is that. I think Nostr is very cool. I just haven't found, and maybe I will, why it is a level that I want to, like, why I even need it at the end of the day. Like, I feel like most of my communication is not that adversarial in nature. If I get deplatformed, I trust Nostr enough to be around. But at the same time, like, I just
UI, UX. You're not as into vlogs, vlogging, and saying good morning as people who are like hardcore Nostr users are, you know?
Yeah. I get it. I don't know how to dance around the subject. I just didn't see the proposition why it incentivizes me to use it. Bitcoin's incentives are very clear.
Yeah, I think a good place to start is listen to 40 hours of Plebchain Radio.
How is a dev do you find 40 hours when you're fighting AI, the China bots? Everybody's trying to pay you less all the time. You're getting attacked on Twitter. That's a skill issue that I can't listen to 40 hours a week. I need to put in the work. That's
never.
The
yeah.
You caught
never,
me.
Never judge a man until you've listened to 40 hours of podcasts in his headphones. Everybody's got time constraints. Everybody's got responsibilities, family. They got to drive out to get raw milk and beef tallow from the rancher an hour outside the city. It's difficult, but everybody's, it's we still strive. We still try to listen to 40 hours every week, and it's part of the benefit is figuring out how to get it done. Finding that stranded time to mine for orange pilling stories on Bitcoin podcasts.
Performance enhancers help a lot. So like smoking cigarettes makes you more productive at work. You get your work done quicker. And then drinking lots of coffee, you don't have to sleep as much.
I'm a big caffeine guy. I love caffeinated beverages. So coffee. The one I found out recently was Celsius. Those were pretty good. What else? Yeah, that's my jam. Drink some caffeine. I feel amazing.
It just makes life better. A good cup of coffee. Paired with a cigarette.
Maybe not the cigarette for my case, but with that said, yeah, definitely before coffee, like brain feels slow, very like kind of like agitated, and then you have some caffeine, and you're like, hey, how's your day? Things are amazing. Everything's great. You're just typing away, making stuff. It's the best. I love it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's blast through these, Boosh. Pies, 121 sats, LFG, strong arm, emoji. Pies, one of our most consistent listeners, boosters, absolute legend. You see him all over the Fountain timeline on everybody's podcast, commenting on it. Once in a while, you'll see him get a little bit grumpy with the podcaster. He keeps people in check. He is an enforcer of no nonsense.
He's a Wild West wild card, yeah, for sure. Next one, Noster Gang, 101 sats. Listener aggression is advised. Rock and roll emoji. Hell yeah. Thank you, Noster Gang. Noster Gang's in those boosts almost every week as well.
Two Angry Cunts podcast. Great podcast. Oh, here we go. It's Sylvie. Her name's Sylvie, Rod.
That's right.
Co-hosted by Bubba, who boosted us earlier. I don't know if I said the amount. 2,222 sats. In my opinion, the way to spread the V4V niche space of music within an already niche Bitcoin space is to not pigeonhole oneself into only Noster-centric mindset. There are V4V music shows. The creators of these shows put a lot of time and creativity into their shows and the artists they choose to play. Support the shows and artists any way one can. Kiss. Okay, so here's a bunch of shows it looks like. So at Upbeats, at the Doer Fells, at Mike Newman, at Colo Mono, and others. That's cool. I'll have to check those out and follow them on Noster, it looks like. Two Angry Cunts apparently was talking about me on their most recent show. I got it tagged on Noster this morning, I think. But yeah, appreciate it, Sylvie. Thank you for the boost.
Next is from Open Mike, 7,777 sats. He was, of course, who we were interviewing. Thanks for adding me. Watch out for pirates. Yeah, watch out. If you live in Minnesota, the land of many lakes, there's a good chance you might run into Somali pirates if you're out boating. So don't take that for granted.
Have you heard about this, Portland? What's happening in Minnesota?
No, I typically don't keep up with news cycles of any sorts, really. Like other than Bitcoin Twitter. Like that's my life.
So in Minnesota, they have the largest population of Somalis outside of Mogadishu, and they are now taking over the lakes.
And what do you mean taking over the lakes? Are they swimming, canoes, boats?
Pirate ships.
Are they
pirate ships?
Arms?
Smiley pirates.
Okay.
Yeah, most of them have arms. And they're showing up to, you know, it's Labor Day next weekend. There are going to be about a lot of people out on the boat enjoying Labor Day weekend, the end of summer. Beware. Have your water cannons set up on the starboard side, you know, or both sides if you have it. Keep the smally pirates at bay.
Yeah, you go out on the lakes, you want to go tubing or wakeboarding, you might not be the captain for very long. Let's just say that.
Do you think Bitcoin could fix this? Like, maybe if the United States had big enough strategic Bitcoin reserves, they would have enough excess capital to deploy maybe some
B-2
bombers to the lakes and take care of these pirates? Like, I feel like Bitcoin could fix this. Or like maybe that like having a hard money would be able to create the incentives for people not to necessarily need to use violence to take each other's boats. They'd have enough wealth to build more boats, right? Or have the boats that they need. I feel like this is a Bitcoin fixes this kind of problem. Are these Somali pirates on the lakes?
Well, I think Somalia was a fairly decent. Well, there's a lot, I don't know if it was ever decent, but it was a lot more stable before the CIA started messing around with it. So if Bitcoin can disintermediate the CIA, the pirates won't have a need to leave their homes and go to Minneapolis. But in the short term, you know, from like the status standpoint, Bitcoin could fix this because El Salvador, the richer they get as a country, the bigger the prisons they can make. And Donald Trump can start deporting the Smalley pirates to El Salvador.
Too spicy of a topic for me there.
Shout out to Nayib Bukele, the most based prison warden in the world. Bitcoin podcasters love him. And then the last boost, Lahav Cliff Shark, 1,337 sats, a social Bitcoin score. So this is an idea that we presented in the episode is to come up with some sort of standardized test. It's like you submit somebody to a questionnaire, which consists of all the purity tests. So they're new to the space. They have a social Bitcoin score. You know whether or not to follow them on Twitter or to have them on your podcast right off the bat. Are they going to pass the purity test, or are they going to naively step on landmines left and right? Lahav Cliff Shark is the videographer behind all of the great videos that the band Stardust has on their YouTube channel. Really cool guy. But yeah. Well, that wraps up the boost. Portland, really big thank you for coming on. This is
thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I hope you get the experience to go on a lot more podcasts.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll definitely see. I think my goal for the coming future, I want to get back into doing more Bitcoin education like I originally started on Twitter and kind of rehosting some of these spaces, not like essentially like node running, but more so like what makes Bitcoin tick. An example is like a Miniscript space. I want to be able to tell people and have a slide deck where people could reference, this is how Miniscript works, and put it very simply, like tie everything up in bows. Become the podcaster this dev wants to be. On the inside, and only practice can make that happen, I believe.
I'm excited to see the tweet or the screenshot of you and Danny Knowles talking two bald men together. The picture of Becca, Rob, and Danny was great. I think that this trend of hairless Bitcoin podcasters is or Bitcoin podcast conversations is awesome.
But
big fan.
But really, the question I got for you, which bald Bitcoin podcaster or which bald Bitcoiner is most closely representative of Lex Luthor from the new Superman movie? I think you know the answer right now. You probably do.
It's staring right across from me right now.
Oh, I was going to say, it's Portland Hoddle.
I don't know. No, the giggler's giving you a run for the money.
Okay. No, I definitely, as of this week, have gotten plenty of like Lex Luthor screenshots from the latest Superman comparing my desire to poke Bitcoin and improve Bitcoin with that of, well, Lex Luthor from Superman, who is the absolute villain in the movie.
I've been spreading the Portland HODL looks like Lex Luthor meme pretty aggressively, so I'm partly to blame for that.
Okay, I approve of that, actually. Like, freedom of speech, baby. Let's go.
Is the new Superman worth seeing? I saw there was a lot of controversy.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. So, do you want me to, since you guys have a lot of viewers, I'll keep it very light. Overall, I would say if you're spending less than $17, I know you could stack some extra sats or donate to the Bugle. But with that said, if you want to just treat yourself to a good time, I feel like that was one of the more fun modern movies I have watched. And yeah, like I don't remember the last time I saw a movie I considered even good walking out of the theater. And that was one I went, it was worth the money. I wasn't pissed that I paid for a ticket and I could have bought sats instead.
Man, that might be a controversial. That might be the most controversial thing you said on this whole show today.
Yeah. To be honest, like I'll make a note. There's a specific element in the movie people really hate and think the entire movie sucks because of it. I'm willing to overlook that.
The overarching story is worth it. The single
it's good value. It's good entertainment. Like it's specifically watching myself on screen. I'm probably a little biased. So yeah, that's I'm really biased here. So yeah, go watch me as Lex Luthor in the new Superman.
You like Superman movie because you see yourself in the villain.
Yeah. Well, question to the podcasters in the room. Do you guys listen to your own podcasts?
I do. Absolutely. Yeah?
Okay. Cool.
There are some of them. Like,
same thing. Watch
your
own movie, man. It's good.
I mean, I feel like if you're not listening to your own podcast and you don't enjoy the content that you're doing, then it's probably not very good in the first place.
Right.
I'm guilty of this as well. I've definitely like watched after they cut it up and do all the editing and listen to myself. I'm like, okay, I sound pretty good. I appreciate that. That's good. Oh, I agree with this guy. This guy's awesome. It's me.
You're very well spoken, Dev, for sure.
Thank you.
I'd love to have Luke on the podcast at some point, but I'm a little bit nervous about it. You know, I ask him like, what do you think's exciting about Bitcoin? He's silent for like 5 minutes and then responds, I think it's an interesting technology. Like it makes for a rough interview.
I think if you get him a few Dr. Peppers, he'll perk up. He'll loosen up real good. He'll start talking about the Bitcoin he loves.
Yeah.
Not trying to speak for him or anything.
So closing up the interview, you got any final closing thoughts, Portland, for our audience that you think is important?
Yeah, I do. And my closing thoughts are, like, we just talked about a barrage of, like, fun humor, parody, satire, and some even, like, really technical topics. Understand, though I poke Bitcoin, and, like, that's, like, that's what makes me comfortable with Bitcoin, is fudding my own bags. But the reality is, like, you should always take to heart, like, the thing, like, in my opinion, the things that were told me are still absolutely true. This is good for Bitcoin. Like, everything ends up turning good for Bitcoin. Even, like, the Comcast nodes allegedly getting DOSed, which they technically didn't get DOSed. Like, a lot of people learned about Bitcoin configs. Bitcoin is for my friends, it's for my enemies. Understand, Bitcoin is a permissionless network. Anybody can use it. That is the actual value of Bitcoin, is the fact that nobody can stop you from using it. Honey Badger, like, it's anti-fragile technology. So, just I want people to understand, like, Bitcoin is one of the best technologies we have as humankind. And it is absolutely, like, Honey Badger, don't give a fuck, strong technology that isn't going to be defeated by any one human being. Like, that's ultimately it. And poking and, like, making Bitcoin better, we need people to do these activities. Ideally in a white hat way, where they disclose and talk about it and, like, bring to attention. Yeah, like, just understand, like, nobody's breaking Bitcoin in a absolutely, like, you're going to lose your life savings way. That's what I got.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. We'll catch you on the next episode of Behind the Podcast.
destruction. The time chain is my religion. I will protect it with precision. Filtering transactions sent by shitcoin of fools. The world needs to have sound money. Spam should not be allowed and is not funny. Time chain police. Time chain police. Become the same.